Welcome to Hype, episode 146. My name is Selena. I'm back and I have Pam with me this week to talk about this week's entertainment news stories. Hello, Pam.
Hello. We missed
you. How are you?
I'm good.
I missed you guys too. That's only partly true. I was like spiraling in a panic spiral last week. I didn't have time to miss anyone, but I'm happy to be back.
Well, sunny days are ahead, I hope.
Yes, I hope so. At least there's a lot of good stuff to talk about this week in entertainment news, so there's always that. And we'll be talking about Eurovision a little bit. We'll be talking about some new oh my god, I forgot how to podcast, you guys. I forgot how to English. Some music and movie news, and actually our news segment is almost exclusively TV this week, so that should be interesting. We've got a patron bonus discussion to talk about, which is the 2017 upfronts, and we've got listener feedback, all kinds of fun stuff. So, without further ado, let us get into the listener feedback information. If you want to send us your comments on anything we talked about, you can do that by emailing hype@hypeable.com. You can find us on Twitter @hypeablehype. You can find us on Instagram @hypeablehype. And you can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. Finally, you can go to hypeable.com, which is hypeable.com. And you can leave us a comment in the podcast section. Okay, so as always, we open with How We Hype, where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom this past week. Tell me what you've been doing in fandom this past week, Pam.
Well, I felt like somebody had to, so I took a bullet for everybody and went to see King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. You guys, well, first of all, we should preface this by saying that everybody is like in concurrence that it's a total flop. And I understand why, because there are so many unnecessary special effects scenes in this movie that there's no way they'll make that money back. So even if it makes like a decent amount of money, the budget was so high that it's going to be considered a flop anyway. And like, that's kind of like the sad part about like big blockbuster type movies like this, is that sometimes it's like, oh, like, you know, it's not like the best, but if it gets a sequel, that's fine with me. But it's just like this will most likely not get anything unless Guy Ritchie's going to pump his own money into it, because it was just like, I think it was over budgeted and under promoted, honestly. The movie itself was it was a guy, you know, honestly, like if you're a fan of like Guy Ritchie movies, because he's got a very specific style of directing and like he's got a very specific vision, then you'll probably enjoy this. But like, don't go into it expecting, you know, like the best King Arthur like adaptation known to man, because you're not going to get that. I feel like there are some...
I don't think anyone's expecting that.
No. Actually, I had a friend that went to see this and she said, she's like, I took my mom. It was fun. Like if you have like no preconceived expectations, she's like, but I feel like you will honestly hate it because you actually like know Arthurian legend. And it's like, I don't think I ever like was going to go into this thinking that, but it is kind of like weird because like you still want to make the connections, even though you don't, like, you're not looking for that. Does that make sense? Like, you're still looking for little Easter eggs. Fun little Katie McGraw scene, too, in there. That was really cool because, like, she's in it. And it's just, she just, like, looks like Morgana because they definitely put her in a similar, like, dress situation like she used to wear on Merlin. So that was really fun.
What is she playing? Can you say?
She is playing Jude Law's wife.
Okay. So
she's not in it for very long. Like, but she is credited, like when the credits roll in the beginning, like her name is there. So that I found was kind of interesting. So I'm kind of wondering if she shot more than they ended up using. The story itself, like, really focuses more on like Excalibur and the power that like Excalibur holds, and less on like the power of like Arthur as a man who can wield the sword, you know? So that was kind of weird because like, I feel like a lot of like Arthurian adaptations have really focused more on like King Arthur as a character. And this one was like very much like the sword as the character and like his journey to being able to wield the Excalibur, and that was kind of weird. No Merlin in sight, although I think I know, but you know, honestly, there was like there were certain points where I thought
Jimin Hansu was playing Merlin.
He did not appear.
Oh, did he not?
No,
was he not in the movie?
No, I mean maybe he was, but he wasn't Merlin. Like there was like he like Arthur this whole time. Like honestly, like my big theory. I really hope I'm not spoiling this for anybody. I feel like nobody's gonna see this movie. I really
if
feel
you
like
haven't
this,
seen it yet. You're not gonna
this
see
random
it.
Like mage lady who was like running around with Arthur. I feel like she was like the Merlin of this movie. Mm-hmm. And then I was like this whole time I was like waiting for this big reveal where they said that like oh she's gonna be Merlin. And then I was gonna be like really upset because they like gender bended Merlin so that they could like. Create this sexual tension that was like unnecessary
like Legends
and
of
like
tomorrow.
Yeah, and so I was already gonna be like really angry about that, but like she's just like she has no name, she's just the mage, but the whole time like she like embodies the spirits of animals, and like she embodies like a few, but like the one that she always goes back to is a hawk, and like Merlin is a type of hawk.
Oh,
so I was like
God.
Oh
right,
you know
right.
Like this is what they did, but they never specified. So yeah, so it's like honestly, if you just want, like, a mindless action Guy Ritchie movie, go see this matinee. But, like, if you don't go see it, you're not missing anything. Mm-hmm. That's, like, it's mediocre. And, yeah. Jude Law, though, like, you know, I think we talk about Jude Law a lot. He is really good in this because, like, I feel like he puts 110% into every character he plays. Mm-hmm. And he was, like, he's very much the villain in this. So it's kind of, like, always fun to, like, watch him because he, like, gets really into stuff. And that bodes well for... you know, Fantastic Beasts too, because it'll be fun to see what he brings to Dumbledore, because he really is somebody that like goes full in to whatever he's embodying. So that was kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
I'll just say mine and you can say your second one, which is I'm just going to mention this briefly because I did do a whole Patreon video on Eurovision, which aired just this past weekend, and I was in my video I was mentioning a few of my favorite tracks that include but were not limited to the Romanian yodel rap song, which is amazing, and of course the Moldovan song, which had my favorite person in the whole world, the epic sax guy, who is like the, you know, if you want like an inspiration for what you want in your life, you should just look at him because he's like living his best life, being his best self, and it's beautiful. And there were a couple of other like interesting tracks. There was the Australian act Mooned the World, which was ridiculous and also hilarious, and that's the kind of fun stuff you get up to in Eurovision. It was so enjoyable. Portugal ended up winning. That was the first time ever that Portugal had won Eurovision, so that was good for them and much deserved. Even though I didn't love the song, I loved that Portugal finally won. I just love it. It's like a celebration of bad taste that we all share together across the world, and I think that's beautiful.
I'm so bummed I didn't get to watch. No pun intended, yeah. For Australia's cheeky flash. But yeah. Yeah, I really wanted to watch, and I was like working, but I was following along on, like, I love Twitter during Eurovision because all of like my friends that are in Europe and stuff like that are like talking about their favorite things and stuff like that. And I feel like this year, out of like all years, Eurovision has had a really, really big presence on social media. And like, it was like taking over Twitter moments and all this stuff. And I didn't catch everything, but I did catch the Romania performance, and that like yodeling was insane. I never would have thought that mm-hmm, you could put mm-hmm. yodeling in with like modern hip hop, and it was like
so
amazing.
Good.
Yeah, it's
right.
So good.
It's like, that's to me is like the epitome of what Eurovision should be. You mm-hmm. know, like mm-hmm. I don't know. I just thought that was amazing. But yeah, also the epic sax guy, like that mm-hmm. would just put an instant smile on your face. I think you should watch that.
I'm gonna have to Google that. Or yeah. YouTube, like, highlights
watch
of Eurovision.
My video.
Oh yeah. Do you have like little like links to
I have little video in video, picture
oh,
in picture.
Look
I use
you.
Effects in my videos.
Oh, amazing. I'm going to have to up my video game.
You know.
patreon.com/hypepodcast.
Oh, yeah.
Check that out.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, I've been listening to music too, but not Eurovision music. And I'm going to keep this like really short because I think like over the next few weeks, my Howie hype is going to be music related because I've just been consuming so much and there's not enough time to talk about it. But I wanted to give a shout out to Paramore's new album, After Laughter, because I feel like we've been focusing a lot on Harry Styles, which is understandable, but they actually released an album as well on May 12th, and it's so, so good. It's definitely like not your childhood Paramore. If you're going in expecting Misery Business, that's not what you're going to get. It's much more pop influenced, like very pop synth, but in a nice way. But the thing that really stood out to me about this album was how emotionally charged and like honest the lyric work was. Hayley Williams, who is the front woman for Paramore, said in an interview, I think it was with Zane Lowe, that they're not singing about like high school problems anymore, which makes sense because as a band they've grown up. So it's very much a reflection of how she's been feeling, like, you know, in her adult years, transitioning into like her 20s and stuff like that. And I think that it works really well for the band. So if you haven't listened to that album yet, I highly recommend checking it out. But if you just want some highlights, and these will be all up on the Spotify playlist that I need to update. My favorite tracks on this album are Rose Colored Boy, Forgiveness, Told You So, and Fake Happy. And I think Fake Happy is probably like my favorite track, but I really like those four.
Cool. So that kind of perfectly leads into the news. Look how that worked out.
Yeah. So, I mean, we couldn't. All right. So we couldn't let this episode go without mentioning the Harry-sized elephant in the room. Harry Styles has officially dropped his first solo album, aptly self-titled, and it came out also on May 12th, and it's really good. I think that I don't know what I was expecting out of this. Like, obviously we got, you know, a few tracks that he performed or released before this actually hit iTunes and record stores and any other place that you have chosen to pick this up. I think in my heart of hearts, I was really hoping for like a cohesive album that kind of like led one track into the other. And that's not this, but I feel like this is a great first step for him. And it makes me really excited to find out where he's going to go from here. I also was like, there's a, if you have Apple Music, they actually just released a like behind the music documentary with him, that kind of followed him around making the album and stuff like that. And I thought it was really cool that he actually like ended up working with just this one guitarist who's the guitarist in his backing band. And it just like was by pure happenstance that he needed a guitarist, and the producer was like, you know, I have this friend that is a guitarist, and so he can like come and like record the songs with you. So the guy did, and he ended up writing a lot with Harry and stuff like that. So I thought that that was kind of like a cool behind the music story. I really like this album a lot. I think that aside from the songs that we have heard already, I really like the tracks Two Ghosts and I like Woman. And those are like my two favorites aside from like the ones that we've already heard, like Carolina and Ever Since New York and Sweet Creature and Sign of the Times and stuff like that. But yeah. Good entry-level album for Harry Styles.
Yeah. I mean, and I know we were talking about maybe doing like a more in-depth discussion of this, and maybe we should because I know that Merrimet probably has thoughts, and I have only listened to it one time, and it was when I was cleaning, so I'm not even sure which song is which, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't stop to look at the names, and obviously I knew I could hear what song it was, but I definitely would love to take it in a little bit more before I give my reaction. But I think at the end of the day, I'd probably feel a little bit the same as you. I think that what I sort of noted immediately with this album was that it was a little bit like all over the place in terms of what I thought he was trying to accomplish. And I also maybe felt, and this is just me, like knowing nothing about music, so don't take me too seriously, but I felt like maybe he was focusing a little too much on replicating the styles of, no pun intended, but like, you know, like replicating the classic rock that he loves so much. Like, I felt like rather than listening to a new take on an old genre, I felt like I was listening to someone trying to do a Rolling Stones song, someone trying to do a Beatles song, someone trying to do an Aerosmith song. You know, like, it felt like there was a lot of what we knew. I'm still pretty sure that that one song, I don't remember which one it was, but it's basically Blackbird. And it's like, it's very weird. It might be Meet Me in the Hallway. I'm not 100% sure which one it is, but
it's Sweet Creature.
Sweet Creature, like, that's the one. I do really like that one, though. I think that at the end of the day, like, Sign of the Times is still my absolute favorite. Like, that stands out to me as, like, a really, really good song. And I think if I had heard any of the other ones, if that had been the first release track, I probably wouldn't have been as hyped as I was, because Sign of the Times is so good. But I also do really like Meet Me in the Hallway, and I really like Carolina, and I really like Two Ghosts. Like, I feel like the first half of the album, I really liked. And then the second half, I didn't like it. And I have to admit that I didn't like Woman that much, because I think that I think that what he leaned into the rock lifestyle a little bit too much in some of the songs, I felt like. And it was like, it was a little bit possessive in a way, if that makes sense. Like, the way that he was singing about this woman, or it might also have been in Kiwi as well. Like, I was like, what, really?
And honestly, and that's when you to really this, need you know? To... And that's when you kind of get to the point where, like, I feel like we said we weren't going to talk about this. We're going to talk about it a little bit.
Sorry, guys.
So Kiwi is actually the one song that I feel like for me, like, it has not grown on me yet. I've tried to listen to it. I don't really care for it very much.
Like, it's clearly his Billie Jean, you know?
Yeah, but I feel like it's a fan favorite. Like, everybody really likes Kiwi. So I think that when that is the case for me, usually I try and find, like, I'm kind of waiting for, like, the track by track interview with Harry Styles, because I would be really curious to know more about the process and the inspiration behind each song, because sometimes I feel like that makes me, like, not necessarily like the track more, but appreciate it more. I don't know, like, or, like, at least, like, because, like, I want to understand why that song and not why, like, the one song Ed Sheeran liked that he ended up not putting on the album, you know? So that's what kind of, like, when I get, like, kind of nerdy, I get, like, very intrigued by that. I really liked Woman, although I will say that I haven't really, like paid too much attention to the lyrics, so that might, like, I might understand more of, like, what you're saying. But what I liked about Woman was that I felt like it was the closest to, like melodically kind of what he did with Sign of the Times, which was pull influence from a certain genre of 70s rock, but bring, like, a new twist to it and, like, kind of modernize it. And I feel like Woman does that as well, very well, at least for me, because I kind of get, like, this very, like, Elton John type vibe, but it also sounds really modern because of whatever producer he worked with on that clearly put, like, a modern, like, they worked together to put a little bit of a modern twist on it. So just melodically, I really enjoy that track. But yeah, I think that, like, for me, like, where Harry stands out a lot is kind of, like, his the vocal work and, like, the layering of, like, certain tracks and things like that. So, like, what you hear in, like, Ever Since New York, where there's, like, a four-part harmony and it kind of, like, changes as the chorus, like, progresses throughout the song. Like, those are the kind of things that I look for and get, like, really excited about, because it just shows, like, a lot of, like, thought. And yeah, but I would really like to know more about, like, the story behind each of the tracks, and I think we're slowly getting that information, so that's exciting.
Okay, so from one hype to another hype, these are all hypes, guys, it's great. I have to admit, this story is kind of funny, because I was not excited about getting this story. I hadn't really paid attention to it. I was like, oh, whatever. I saw it was in the dock. I was like, Marimar's probably going to get this, and Marimar's not here. And I was like, okay, fine, I'll take it. I watched it, and I am hype, you guys. Hashtag hype. Will and Grace is something that I did not think that I wanted a revival of. Did not think I needed a revival. I was not interested in the revival trailer at all. I had major sort of, like, X-Files, Gilmore Girls kind of feelings about it, and I wasn't really sure how it was going to be. after watching the trailer, I am pumped. Like, this trailer does exactly what I feel like a revival trailer is going to be. It is a wonderful mix of the characters that we love and a very, very overt breaking of the fourth wall. Literally, there is no wall, actually. That's how much it breaks it, of Deborah Messing and Eric McCormack, who are thinking about whether or not they're going to come back to the show. And the show slowly manifests around them. And there's a musical number. And Karen and Jack are back. And they're in character. And it all feels so right. And it feels like, it's kind of like, it's funny because it's on NBC, right? But it kind of does feel like one of their like event musicals in a way. Like, it's very theatrical and it's very exciting, and you can tell that the cast is just very excited to be there, and you really get a sense that this might actually reinvigorate or bring something new to Will and Grace, like bring it into a new era rather than what I feel like a lot of the revivals have done, which is just kind of try to pick up the story or try to spin new story or try to sort of breathe new life into something that has died out. Like, Will and Grace doesn't need a revival, but it's getting one, and it looks like it's going to be great. So I'm very excited. Are you excited?
Yeah. You know, honestly, I think I was like you, but mm-hmm. Something happens when you see these guys together. Yes. It just makes you so happy and so excited. It just, like, brings back so many memories. This show is so good. It's, like, so timeless, even mm-hmm. though it's, like, clearly rooted in like, a specific day and age, but it's just like, oh, this show makes me so happy. And like, I'm sure there are episodes that I have missed. Like, it's definitely not a show that I've seen like from start to finish, but like anytime there's reruns on, like, I watch them, like, I can't help myself. And I'm just so like thrilled that everybody's back, because I feel like with Will and Grace, it's a revival that only would have worked if they would have gotten everybody to come back, and they did. And so that, I think that that speaks volumes. Mm-hmm. And I love that they played around with that, because like,
me too.
Deborah Messing's like, oh, like, I'm busy. And he's like, what are you doing? She's like, I tweet, I Instagram.
Yeah.
It's so cute. It's great.
It's very self-aware. And that's what I feel like is so refreshing, because that's what I was trying to say before. Like, a lot of these revivals are sort of like, we're just going to pick off where we left off. And it's like, yeah, but, you know, so this is refreshing. I'm suddenly very stoked. Seeing them together, like you said, makes all the difference. And it's coming back to NBC this fall. So stay tuned.
Yeah. So this actually, I love the way you organized this doc today, because something else that's coming back to NBC is Timeless. And this, you guys, this is crazy.
This is amazing. Because
Timeless was initially canceled by NBC. And then 4 days later, they rescinded the cancellation.
They went like, back JK, in time.
They went back in time. And they were like, JK, we're bringing the show back 12 episodes sometime in 2018. Be ready. And I love this story so much, because we have seen in years past where like fan bases really rally together and figure out how to change the mind of like the big wigs at networks and things like that. But it hasn't happened in a while. It just like kind of gives you hope for all of your shows that get canceled, that there is a possibility of an afterlife. And in the case of Timeless, like, it worked out really well, because they're just going back to their home network. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. everybody involved with the show had like a really fun time announcing this news to the fan base. Matt Lattner, who stars in the show, took to his official Facebook page and was like dressed as his character, Wyatt. And he was like, you guys, like, we did it. Operation Resuscitate Timeless was a success. Like, and like the showrunners did kind of like the same thing. They were like, we went back in time and we fixed it. And at the end of the day, like, the most beautiful part about this is that they really understand that it was the Timeless fans that made their voices heard. And at the upfronts that happened for NBC earlier this week, the network heads also said that, like, it's a show that didn't get a lot of viewership, but we couldn't not figure out how to make this work after the fan base was so passionate and like, vocal about things. So, like, basically, moral of the story is fandom is power. And
yes.
And you should really talk about your favorite things. Oh my gosh. Like, don't be afraid to, like, be a fan. I feel like sometimes, like, we're guilty of this too. Like, we don't want to hype things up too much on Twitter.
Especially and stuff, me. I never talk about what I like.
But, like, you should. And so I've been trying to do that more. And I'm, like, more inspired now by, like, the success of Timeless.
Yes.
But, like, you know, it's going to happen to, like, to continue doing that and, like, not be scared to... to be like, oh, I like this.
And
I don't care.
And like not to like verbally subtweet here, but I feel like there's been a little bit of a discourse that fans should just kind of shut up and let the networks do their thing because like what we do in social media doesn't really matter. This proves that discourse wrong. You know, this clearly proves that campaigns work. They don't always work. They didn't work for Agent Carter, although every time I tweet about it, the creator, he's like, hope isn't lost yet, keep going. So yeah. I take
because you really never know.
But yeah, and it didn't work for Pitch, obviously, and that's like super upsetting.
Or Girl Meets World. Right, like there's so many
Vicious. So but like it's not like a thing of like, oh, if you're just passionate enough, your show will get picked up. Because it's kind of like asking for a miracle, you know, in a weird way. Like, it's not, you're not always going to get your miracle, but it's nice to know that the networks are aware and that they're all trying in their own way to figure out how to make television in an age where ratings aren't the only thing that matter, you know, to advertisers and to the market in general. Like the CW is really good. I feel like they're leagues ahead of most other networks because they are so aware of how their shows are performing digitally and on Netflix and stuff like that. And it's nice to see that a network like NBC is ready to give fandom a chance.
Yeah, totally. And I think that you bring up a really, really good point because, you know, I people would like ask me all the time, like when we were talking about Pitch, when it was on, like, how can I watch this? So I make sure that my view is like matters, like my view goes into the Nielsen scan ratings, like for the numbers and things like that. And it's like, it's a really hard question to answer. But I think that like, I think that with anytime something like a Timeless happens, like it just kind of reinforces that point that just tweeting about things sometimes can make all the difference, because this is like a prime example of a show that would have seen no more. Mm-hmm. And people rallied behind the idea and you don't do things because you don't think that they'll work. You do things in the off chance that it will work.
Yeah. So exactly. Yeah. That's a really good point. Mm-hmm. So speaking of, I guess, kind of ish things that people are passionate about. It's a weak transition. Sorry, guys. They can't all be gold. Fox has chosen, after a bit of uncertainty about the future of New Girl, they have chosen to renew it for a 7th and final season, which is good news for me because I like that show, and good news for fans who were really worried that season 6 would be its last. And I feel like this is another way in which television really is trying to do right by their shows and their creators and their fandoms as well, because New Girl has, I believe, the season 6 finale just aired or it's about to air, and the creators Liz Merriweather and her team had not planned for this to be the last, so it doesn't really end in a way that is necessarily 100% satisfactory. So what NBC or Fox has chosen to do is renew it for a 7th season and then say, okay, but this will be the last one. And this is always the best that any show can hope for. You know, for me, obviously, my main passion right now is The 100. And that's like literally all I want is for the writers to know that the season they're planning is the last season. So because if season 4 had been the last, that would have been like disastrous. So,
well, especially for something like The 100, because it's so intricate and like,
right.
That, yeah,
there's a big difference.
This is the best, the best bittersweet news you can get.
Exactly. And so New Girl is coming. We don't know how many episodes is getting. Sonia, who wrote this article, says that it might only be 8 episodes long. Like they don't even know, but they do know it's coming back and they do know they're going to have a chance to finish it. They do know that Jess and Nick, they are like the on and off couple of the show, and we do get to see how they end up, and Cece and Schmidt get to end in a however the show wants them to end. This is great. I'm just really happy. I'm not totally caught up because I have to wait for the seasons to be on Netflix, like with the Brooklyn Nine-Nine now, but I am just really, really happy, again, that the show gets to finish on its own terms. And as an avid Nick and Jess shipper, I'm also very happy to see them hopefully get a happy ending. Speaking of happy endings, Pam...
because it's fairy tale. Yeah, I do. Wink. So we have some really crazy Once Upon a Time news for you guys as well. Last week we talked a little bit about the fact that Jennifer Morrison, who plays Emma Swan, had decided not to renew her contract for a seventh season. This was before the show even got picked up for a seventh season. And now this week we learned that she's not the only cast member we'll be saying goodbye to. I will say that I have not watched the season finale yet. I'm a little bit behind on Once Upon a Time. It's, as you guys know, the show I wish I knew how to quit, but for some reason I just keep trudging along with Once Upon a Time. So according to Entertainment Weekly, who was first to break the news, along with Jennifer Morrison, these are the cast members that are exiting the season and will not be returning for season 7. So Jennifer Goodwin's not coming back. She plays Snow White. Josh Dallas, who plays Prince Charming, is also not coming back. Emily DeRavine, who plays Belle, is not coming back. Jared Gilmore, who plays Henry, is also exiting the show. And the and also Rebecca Mader, who plays Zelina, is also leaving. The two cast members that will be returning are Lana Parrilla, who of course plays Regina / the Evil Queen, and Colin O'Donoghue, who plays Killian / Captain Hook.
So this is horrible.
I know. I don't even know. Maybe this is it. Maybe they just like Hook and Regina just go on one final journey.
But that doesn't make any together. Sense.
I honestly don't know. No, I haven't seen the finale yet, but I will say that like a few weeks back, Adam and Eddie did this interview where they said that they weren't ending on a cliffhanger for season 6 and they were just going to tie up a bunch of loose ends. So maybe they've resolved most of this and it makes sense. But right now I'm completely in the dark. But if you have seen the finale, please feel free to shed some light on this because I can't wrap my brain around
it. I haven't either. I haven't seen the finale. I only saw the musical episode. And
me too.
So good, right?
Yeah, it was so fun.
That should be my TV show of the week, actually. Hold that thought. I will add that in right now. But I mean, just going back to the finale, I don't know how it ends, but I do know obviously that Hook and Emma got married and were supposed to have their happily ever beginning or whatever they said.
Right.
So
right.
This, I mean, unless, and I don't know if Rumpelstiltskin is coming back as well, but I was thinking that it could be like a prequel, you know, that they could go back and set it in Storybrooke and have it be like a prequel series. Or, you know, it could literally be like you said, like they get transported to some alternate dimension and it's literally just the Hook and Regina show. But it's just so, it just doesn't make any sense. Like that would be like a spin-off. They can't do Once Upon a Time without Emma and without the Charmings because they are like the heart of the show. So it just, I mean, I love Lana Parrilla as Regina. I think she's fantastic. And I would love to see a whole show about her, but it still seems weird to try to continue Once Upon a Time without the main cast. And I'm sure they are feeling that, too. I'm sure they're sitting there going, like, what the heck are we going to do?
Right. And it's also possible that you guys that have seen the finale are all laughing at us because we can't figure out how this is going to work. Specifically with Hook and Emma, because they're supposed to be each other's like one true loves and all this stuff. And they just got married. And it's kind of like,
it would be a big F you to the shippers of Regina and Hook ended up together. Like all the shippers.
I know. Well, all the Swan Queen shippers, all the Captain Swan shippers. Like it's just, that would be really weird.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see.
Maybe there'll be a thing where all of the other characters are like turned into inanimate objects, like
in Beauty and the Beast
style. And the whole season is them trying to break the spell.
Oh my gosh, that would be really awful, but also probably pretty funny.
Or like they're just trapped somewhere and they have to save them. Like that could very easily. But that would be so dumb because then we would expect to see them and they've left the show. Like. I don't know.
Anyway. I also I also definitely think that this is probably the last season we're going to get because, yeah. And this is hot off the presses of ABC Upfronts, which are happening right now as we record on Tuesday. They have officially moved Once Upon a Time to Friday nights, and that's usually where shows go to die.
Right.
Yeah. So it's going to be the swan song, if you will, most likely. And, Yeah. We'll see.
Wow. Actually, continuing the theme of a well-organized doc, another actor is leaving a show that we care about. And this one is a bit of a head-scratcher, to be honest. So The 100, if you've been following along with The 100 Season 4, you know that they are well on track to kill off like half their cast. That's a little bit of an exaggeration, but not a big exaggeration because it's pretty crazy. But we've just learned with two episodes to go, three episodes at the time this was revealed, TV Line learned from official channels and with a quote from showrunner Jason Rothenberg that Isaiah Washington, who plays Jaha, won't be returning as a regular in season 5. And this is a bizarre way to announce it if he was dying, because as I said, with only a couple of episodes to go, it makes no sense to make an official announcement about it that would spoil his death. So my sort of initial thought is that he is going to be somewhere like off screen, and that he has like the potential to return, but that he's not going to outright die, because if he does die, then this announcement makes absolutely no sense. As for Jaha not coming back for season 5, I am maybe one of the few people in the fandom that really enjoys Jaha on the show. Like, I think he adds something really interesting, and I think his journey of, like, in a way, as I said in the article too, like, he is the one that has made all of the plot happen. You know, he was the one who sent the 100 to the ground. He was the one who sent the Ark to the ground. He was the one who found the Alley chip and who sort of facilitated Clark learning about the end of the world. So without Jaha there to sort of make plot happen, I don't know what they're going to do. And I also just really enjoy that his journey of, like, constantly thinking that he is the chosen one who has to find his people and sort of getting more and more extreme in his actions of trying to save everyone. But the good news is that Isaiah Washington is probably like one of the most high profile cast members and is probably one of the ones who's being paid the most. So if I'm going to look at the bright side, this probably frees up a fair bit of budget for them. And I don't know, I don't have any information on this, but I don't know if that could be why they made this decision, because he's too expensive. I hope not. But I'm sad about this. I don't know if you have any feelings about it.
I mean, I'll be the first to admit that I don't always enjoy Jaha when he's on screen. I think that, like, what was it, season 2, season 3, when he was just, like, in the desert.
That was season 2. I love that. Yeah, like, everyone hates that. I thought that was
amazing. I do appreciate, like, this weird, like religious connotation, like, underlying themes that are kind of going along with this idea of his journey. Like, I think that that's really clever, especially considering that they're, like, as far as, like Jaha and everybody else that, like, came to Earth are concerned, they're kind of like in this new terrain, so it makes sense to kind of have an underlying idea of somebody trying to seek a higher power, and that's kind of like what he's doing. But yeah, I'll be the first to admit that I did not enjoy that very much, and just like my hatred for Jaha has just grown and grown
No,
not because it's bad, but just because it's just like, Jaha, just get out, just go. So
I get that. I do wonder, like, again, because I do totally get, like, the feelings on Jaha, and I do think this season they've kind of not, like, he's been a big part of the show, but they've sort of totally detached from his emotional state. Like, he literally just exists in season four, to move plot along, and he does have emotion about what he's doing, but it's very, he is definitely a supporting character, I would say, rather than a lead in terms of emotional involvement. And so in that sense, I could see them writing him out fairly smoothly, but it would just, I would just be sad because I like him on the show. So let's see what happens. Anyway, I also just wanted to mention, speaking of The 100, that we just got a release date for the soundtrack for season 4. It's actually going to come out on Friday. So when you listen to this, it'll be like today or tomorrow or something. And Hypeable, we're going to be able to premiere a couple of exclusive tracks. So you should definitely head on over to Hypeable and check those out. It has it's from Tree Adams and it has a total of 28 tracks. So a really good hefty soundtrack that the music is so good for the show. So you should definitely go check that out.
Very cool. I'm excited for that. Although I'll probably wait until I'm caught up with season 4 mm-hmm. to listen. But I'm excited that it's coming
yeah.
for everybody that is caught up. Mm-hmm. So something else that's on the way is a animated Deadpool series from none other than Donald Glover. And this is kind of like, it was kind of like really cool news, but also like, I think a lot of people are kind of thinking, wow, Donald Glover, you really have time for so much because he's doing so many amazing things. And this is just kind of like another awesome thing that he's going to be bringing us. According to Entertainment Weekly, who broke this news, FXX is the network that ordered the series from Glover, which makes sense because they're under the Fox blanket. And those are the people that greenlit his Atlanta series, which is doing really well and coming back for a second season very soon. There's not much more information about this other than the fact that Donald Glover is like the creator behind it and it's going to happen probably sometime in 2018. Allegedly, it's going to be about 10 episodes long, but there's no like official title yet. So it's going to be fun to kind of watch this progress as things move along towards production. But yeah, if you're a fan of Deadpool, there's going to be more of that coming your way in a completely different way than what the movies have been giving us. So
cool. It's very, very cool. Mm-hmm. I'm excited. And moving on to MTV, following their baffling and very unpopular decision to axe Sweet Vicious a couple of weeks ago, now another one of their series, it's not being canceled, it's just making a weird move. So the Shannara Chronicles, which is entering its second season very soon, is moving from MTV to Spike TV, which is odd. Like the 10 episode installment, I believe it's like already done. Like it's pretty much ready to air. And the first season did really well on MTV. And reportedly it was the most viewed scripted show on MTV last year. So even going above Teen Wolf. And yeah, it's just really weird. Like they're thinking that the show will pick up more viewers in Spike. I have to admit, I don't know much about Spike TV.
Well, Spike is owned by Viacom Media, who also owns MTV, mm-hmm. so they are kind of keeping it in the family mm-hmm. still. If you like, kind of like look at the bigger under, like the bigger umbrella with which like everything is under, so it makes more sense than having the show, I guess, move to like Fox or something. But like, what isn't owned by Rupert Murdoch anymore? So I guess it really is all apples and oranges or whatever that correlation is. But I do know that this was like the most expensive series MTV has ever made. It is interesting that you mentioned that it's already done and they're just moving it, though, because it would make more sense if they hadn't started filming and Spike was like, we have some stuff in our budget, like let's just create this next season. But that's not really the case.
I don't know. I'm totally at a loss for this, but I'm just glad it's not being canceled. So mm-hmm. we'll see again, as I don't know anything about Spike, but I hope that it they're right in their gamble, to be honest. Like, I hope it continues to grow because I'm excited to watch it.
Well, we have one more. Well, no, we don't have one more. This is like the penultimate story, but this is also kind of a little weird. American Idol ended a few years ago, but now ABC is hell-bent on bringing the popular singing competition back. And they have officially announced that plans are underway to revive the show. And they have also signed on Katy Perry, who's going to be joining Idol as a new judge. This is also very interesting because Kelly Clarkson is also going to be a judge on a singing competition, except she's heading to NBC and The Voice. So that's kind of like a little strange because she got her start on American Idol, as everybody knows. As far as like this news goes, I haven't really gauged fan reaction yet. So I'm not sure if people are like excited about this or what. But Fox is decidedly unexcited about this. Fox, of course, was the original home network for American Idol, and they had some pretty strong words to say with regards to ABC and Fremantle Media's decision to revive the show less than 2 years after it said goodbye. This is a quote from Fox head Dana Walden, who said, "They were determined to get the show back on air as quickly as possible. We spent about $25 million sending a clear message that it was the farewell season. It felt to us it would be extremely fraudulent to bring the show back quickly, that fans would not appreciate being told one thing and then having the show brought back right away. We thought it was too early to bring it back. We did not see fan excitement and enthusiasm. We tried to engage Fremantle Media about bringing it back in 2020. They were not interested in that." So that's going to, this is very interesting. I'm just intrigued by all like the behind the scenes drama, but for better or worse, Idol is coming at you guys, and we'll see how it does.
Interesting. Yeah. They don't let anything die anymore.
No. Ridiculous.
This is the zombie season, really. Like Lost had it right all along.
The zombie era of television.
Yes. It's finally here. We never even realized. Yeah. They walk among us. This is dumb. I don't care. I don't watch these shows anyway. All right, so our final news story is interesting. Speaking of things that won't die, what is dead may never die, guys. George R. R. Martin has given some new information about HBO, et cetera, developing not one, not two, not three, not four, but five Game of Thrones related spin-off series. He did a massive live journal blog post on Not a Blog that you guys can go check out if you want the full details. But basically, a few bullet points from what he talked about. He said that he doesn't want us calling them spin-offs because he defines them all as prequels. He says, "Every one of the concepts under discussion is a prequel rather than a sequel. Some may not even be set in Westeros rather than spin-off or prequel. However, I prefer the term successor show." That's what I've been calling them. And he also says that for every single series, they want to hit the standard of Game of Thrones. They want, even though it's not going to be David Benioff and Dan Weiss that will be show running, they are trying to sort of hit the epicness of Game of Thrones. And also finally gave a little bit of details about what stories we are not going to see. And one of them is Duncan Egg, which is sort of the official prequel series that he has been writing following, I believe it's Aegon Targaryen and his squire. And that's the one he's still writing, and he doesn't want to pull another Game of Thrones and have HBO surpass him with that story. So he says, "When the day comes that I finish telling all of my tales of Duncan Egg, then we will do a TV show about them, but that day is still a long ways off." And the other prequel that we shouldn't expect is Robert's Rebellion, which is like the one where Ned Stark and Jaime Lannister played huge parts, and the one where we found out about the birth of Jon Snow and all that stuff. So, but Martin basically says that like we will know everything there is to know, so he doesn't want to do a whole show about that. I would just like him to write the books, you know. Like, I'm sorry, but I know that's a dumb cliche thing to say, but I'm already half like tuned out of the Game of Thrones TV show, and I'm excited to see what they come up with. I hope, always hoping for more female led shows, especially. But they could make anything happen within this world of Westeros and beyond, and I'm excited cautiously, but I mainly just want to know how A Song of Ice and Fire ends. You know, it seems like that is already such an epic tale. Then to try to spin five other equally epic tales off is just like too much for my brain to process.
Yeah, it's so funny because last week we talked a little bit about, well, last week they mentioned that there were four spinoffs in the works. So we talked a little bit about this, but Marima made a good point where she kind of said that the most comforting thing about Game of Thrones for her is that there was always an end in sight. And now it feels like there's no end in sight with these potential spinoffs in the works. But I do appreciate that they're not going with obvious choices, because that kind of just keeps everything a little bit more exciting. Like, it would have been very easy albeit very lazy, to go with something like Robert's Rebellion or Dunkin' Egg, because those are all ideas we've heard tossed around before. So here's hoping that if they end up going with any of these ideas, that it'll be something a little bit more original and thrilling for fans that wish to continue the journey.
Cool. Yeah, I agree. All right, so moving on to TV show of the week. We both got two, so why don't you go first with one, and then we'll go back and forth.
All right. I want to talk about Riverdale, because I'm still watching.
Yay. is Archie dead yet?
No, but oh my god, how do I say this without like...
Is he the murderer?
No, but like...
I actually know who the murderer is. I was so disappointed.
Yeah. I mean, I was like a little disgusted, but also like your idea would have definitely been cooler. Spoilers, you guys, it's not Archie.
Oh my God. It would have been so cool. Is he at least a secret blossom?
Is he? I don't know about that yet, but like, okay, can we just put like a massive spoiler warning before this, and I'll just tell you everything and it'll be fine? Are you actually going to?
Yes. Okay. Please tell me everything. All right. I don't care. I'm not going to watch it.
Spoilers for anybody that doesn't want to know how Riverdale ends for season one. Just like stop listening now and like fast forward like probably like 3 minutes. We'll be fine. So basically like, we'll figure it out. So basically Killer Killer, he's the killer. It's actually Daddy Blossom, which is like really disturbing. And then he like hangs himself at the end of that episode. So like no comeuppances for what he did. And it turns out he's like even worse than all of the Southside Serpents, which like, you know, stereotypes running amok. But more importantly, the final episode, Cheryl is actually kind of like gone a little batshit because of everything that has transpired about how Jason died and like her family's like true source of income, which is basically that they're pushing cocaine. And so she kind of like goes a little crazy and she decides that she's going to kill herself. And so in like the midnight hour, she texts Veronica and she's like, thanks for trying to help, but I'm going to go be with Jason now. And they like, they figure out that she's going to the lake. So like, it's like in the middle of winter and she's out there like banging on the frozen lake and like, they're going to go save her, try and stop her. And then all of a sudden she just falls through the lake, which is like what she wanted. And so they all just like start running for her. It's like Archie, Jughead, Betty, and Veronica. And Archie just like completely like destroys his hands because he just starts like punching the lake and like everything's bloody and stuff. And then he like pulls her out and they save her. And like her story arc for the season ends by telling her mom that they need to be cleansed of like everything their like her dad has done. So she burns the house down because like that's her. She says that like that's the only way that they can like really start new is to just get rid of everything that like basically the drug money brought forth upon the family. Archie is not, as far as we know, like a secret blossom, but the big twist, I don't know if you heard this, was that is that Betty and the Coopers, like they're actually part of the Blossom lineage. So that's why they were so obsessed with the baby, because they said that it was a pure blossom, because technically...
Pure blossom.
Yeah, because technically her sister and Jason were related, and that's why Daddy Cooper was like, you can't be together, because he knew that it was kind of incestuous, even though it's kind of like a little further back down. So it's not like as creepy as like brother and sister, but it is still kind of creepy. So everything kind of comes to a head at the end for Archie, and I'm like, no, I'm just kind of interested to see how he deals with this, because I don't think there's no coming back from normalcy of like from this. So basically, Betty gives this big speech at the Jubilee for Riverdale, the town. And she says that Riverdale needs to do better because everybody wants to pretend like they live in this picture perfect society. But like there's so many like deep, dark secrets and yada, yada, yada. And then the last scene that we get is with Archie and Fred Andrews, and they're hanging out at Pop's, like having dinner, whatever. And then Archie goes to the bathroom. When he comes back, there is a, like some guy that's trying to rob Pop's and he's got a gun. And he goes to point it at Fred, and then Archie jumps in the way and you think Archie got shot, but it turns out it's Fred that got shot. And that's like the last scene that we see is like Archie holding his dying dad's form on the floor of Pops.
My God.
Yeah.
Wait. Dylan McKay, aka the only reason I might be considering tuning in again, died. Are you serious?
Yes.
Oh my God.
I know.
This Why?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm just telling you that that's how it ends. Big, big drama in the form of gunshots and, yeah.
Oh my God.
Craziness. So, there you go. That's the Riverdale recap.
Jesus. Well, I'm glad I stopped watching it already. I feel like and frustrated just listening to you talk about it. Oh my gosh. But I'm again, anyone who's enjoying it, good for you. I don't want to invalidate
you. You can talk to me about it. Come tweet at me and we can talk about Riverdale.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's fine to enjoy whatever you enjoy. And I mean, I'm enjoying something that some people would be very mad about, which is, of course, The 100. And I just wanted to bring it up real quick because we're nearing the finale already. Like, I'm recording this. We're recording this. I think Pam is here. I'm recording on Tuesday night, and the penultimate episode of the season is tomorrow. So it's wild, guys. Like, this season, I feel like in some ways it is mind-blowingly good, and in other ways it is, like, incredibly frustrating. Like, there are some emotional beats that I feel like I'm just, like, waiting. This season has been a lot of action and big things happening and very little sort of time for the characters and the audience to breathe with those things that are happening. So you just kind of move on from big things a lot. But at the same time, I do really admire the season's sort of really relentless pace. And it's all, as you may know, it's all built around like this countdown clock to the end of the world. You know, like it's counting down the days until the world ends. And now we have 24 hours left, these final two episodes. And there's so much that has to happen. And there's so many emotional moments that I've been waiting for all season that haven't happened yet. So I'm like afraid and excited. I'm very, very, very excited with these final couple of episodes. I'm trying to set up a couple of interviews and things like that. So stay tuned to Hypeable for that. And I hope everyone's enjoying the season so far and aren't too stressed out and sad about it.
That's good. I'm glad. I'm in the midst of catching up. But one thing that I did start watching is Master of None Season 2, which premiered last Friday on Netflix. If you guys have been listening to us for a while, you will know that we were all really big fans of the first season of Master of None, which is, of course, Aziz Ansari's show. And Season 2 really does give you a lot more of the same. It's just really thoughtful writing. And I'm 5 episodes in, and it's so, so... It's thoroughly enjoyable. And the first episode is so cool because he shot it in Italy. It's all done in black and white. And basically, he was saying in an interview that everything that you see there is basically inspired by the time he spent in Italy. So Aziz actually like went over there and worked as a pasta apprentice and worked at basically all these places that you see interior shots of. So I thought that that was really cool. It kind of just shows the dedication to the storytelling that he's doing. And yeah, it's just like, it's such a great show. So if you haven't seen Master of None Season 1, highly recommend watching that. And if you have and haven't tuned into Master of None Season 2, please take the time to do so because it definitely holds up. And I'm really excited to watch more.
Cool. And finally, I just wanted to bring it back to Once Upon a Time because I know we both watched the musical episode and we really should talk a little bit about that because it was really good. Like, I was a little bit, like, stunned, which is odd because I've watched Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and they do, like, amazing tracks every week. But the songs were just, like, extremely catchy and everyone involved were really good singers. Like, the opening track was with Ginnifer Goodwin and Josh Dallas and they are amazing. And then Lana Perilla came in and just, like, smashed her solo and... Rebecca Mader had her solo track as well. And Colin O'Donoghue is like so good. He had like his little spike track, you know, like in Buffy. I loved it. Did you, watched it too, right?
I did. Love it? I loved this so much. Because when they announced that this was going to be a thing, I thought to myself, oh, like this is, I can't figure out how this is going to work. But it was like, the premise was really cheesy, which was that like the song in Emma's heart was ultimately going to be her biggest weapon. But it works so well with the premise of like fairy tales and things like that. And I was really impressed, like you, because they actually hired people to write original material, like original songs, and it would have just been so easy to kind of do like a jukebox musical, which just a jukebox musical, for those of you that don't know, basically just uses other people's songs and kind of writes them into the story. So like Mamma Mia is a good example of a jukebox musical that doesn't really tell the story of ABBA, but just uses ABBA songs to tell the story that they want to tell. So yeah, so I was really impressed by that. But yeah, it was so good. It was so campy, but it was so great.
I liked it. I thought it was good. I always, whenever shows do like musical stuff, I feel like for the most part, it's pretty like, it's pretty cringy. But this one was just really joyful and sort of brought home some of the things that, that brought me to Once Upon a Time in the first place. You know, it had some just really sweet, happy, joyful music to, and obviously the Buffy parallels were like unavoidable. And I'm always just so grateful to Buffy for existing and for bringing something like this into, because without the Buffy musical, we wouldn't have any of this. So very, very cool and very, 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 very well done. And made me kind of fall in love with Once Upon a Time all over again, just in time for it to end. Yeah, so that brings us to the end of TV Show of the Week, and we would love to hear what you guys have been watching as well. You can tell us that in listener feedback for next week's episode. For this one, we have a bunch of stuff to get through, and we're going to start with the Patreon question.
Yeah, this week on Patreon, just because we all ended up watching like what is it, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 at just the different weeks. I feel like every week we had a different review from each host because that's just the way the schedule, like the release schedule, worked out. But I kind of feel like that was the kickoff to the summer movie blockbuster season. So I thought it might be fun to hear from our patrons and find out which movie they're most excited to see hit theaters this summer. So that was the question that we asked. Emmy Foss wrote in the first comment that we have here, and she made a point that a lot of people agreed with, which was, are there any movies coming out that are not Wonder Woman? Because that's all that matters, to be honest.
That's hilarious.
Abby Benzine says, ditto to Emmy, does anything matter besides Wonder Woman? I honestly can't think of any other summer movies. And then finally, we have a comment here from Laura Morrow, who says, I'm very excited for Wonder Woman, but I'm also very excited for Spider-Man. I have never seen a Spider-Man movie before, but I am in love with the new actor playing him, and I'm very excited to see both of these movies. So that's kind of fun. I think that, you know, honestly, if you've never seen a Spider-Man movie, maybe this reboot is like a good place to jump in. It seems, I think, yeah, so. You won't have to worry about Tobey Maguire or Andrew Garfield or anything like that.
I will say I am really excited for Dark Tower with Idris Elba. I'm not sure exactly when that's coming out because I feel like it's been delayed like a million times. But that movie, if you've seen the trailer of it, it looks so good. It's based on a Stephen King's novel, and Idris Elba plays the gunslinger, and he meets up. He lives in this like post-apocalyptic world, and he goes to our world and meets up with like a child who's seen like visions of this world, and they go to stop the Man in Black, and it's like an epic sci-fi adventure that looks really good. And I'm also really, really excited for Valerian.
Yeah, that was the one I was gonna pick too. Valerian, it just looks so visually beautiful.
Yeah, it does. I feel like a couple of those, like those sort of sci-fi, colorful, imaginative, out-of-the-box sci-fi movies. I'm really drawn to those right now. Still very disappointed that Passengers wasn't as amazing as I was hoping it was going to be. But to be honest, like, I feel like Emmy and Abby hit it on the head. Like, Wonder Woman is the one movie that I feel like we're all just anxiously waiting for. And then when it comes to, like, fall and winter, obviously Thor and Star Wars are probably the ones that I'm most looking forward to.
Yeah.
I'm kind of tired of movies.
It's like, a lot.
I've been let down so many times lately.
I know. I guess, like, you know, honestly, I don't know if I'm excited, but like I'm excited for people that, like, my best friend is a really big Pirates of the Caribbean fan, so I'm really excited for her because she's so excited about Pirates coming out. But I feel like I don't have as many expectations for that. And that's like the only other movie I can think of, like the big you know, big movie. But like you, I think Valerian is probably my number one behind the obvious. But also because that movie's been, I feel like we've been seeing trailers for it for like 2 years now. So it's like the anticipation has been building and I love Dane DeHaan and yeah, it just looks really good. So
yeah,
July 21st is the release date in the US for that, by the way, in case anybody's curious.
So for my me, it's probably like January 2019.
Oh, yeah. Hey, July 20, will you, oh no, I was going to say, aren't you still going to be in San Diego, maybe in San Diego, July 21st?
Maybe, we'll see. We can go see Valerian. Yeah. Like, who cares about celebrities? We'll just go see.
on a Friday night.
I know. No, I mean, I still haven't watched Moana. Like, it's out here, but I just never got around to watching it.
I bawled during Moana, by the way. I don't know if you're like a movie crier, but I just, I tried to hold it in and I just couldn't. I just like the tears were free flowing down my face.
We'll see. Okay, so we're going to move on into some tweets from our listeners. Do you want to just go back and forth?
Yeah, so...
Do you want to take the first one?
I do, but I'm going to preface this by saying we might have to push this back. We actually addressed this last week, but it's kind of... It needs a more extensive answer. So if you want to play, we'll play. But if not, we'll just save it for next week. So Kelpie tweeted us last week and said, I'm a huge fan of BBC Radio 4's Desert Island Discs, Ed Sheeran's interview, and music choices are so insightful. What would you take to the island? So I Googled this, and the questions that they ask on this program are, which 8 tracks you would take to a desert island, like if you were making like your own mixtape, I guess. And then which book would you take and which luxury item would you take?
Oh my God.
Yeah, would you?
Yeah, this definitely needs some work.
Yeah.
Like, I don't
know. So Merima and I were going to
think about this more.
Merima and I were going to do it this week, but I think we're going to save it for next week when hopefully all three of us are on. But Kelpie, mm-hmm. we did not forget. Mm-hmm. This is the second time we brought it up. I'm just keeping it in the dock so that we all have time to think about this and answer.
This is very, very exciting. Mm-hmm. I think off the top of my head, it's weird because like one of my favorite songs of all time is Fast Car. And I've been listening to it a lot recently for some reason. Mm-hmm. So like off the top of my head, that would be one of my tracks. But I would have to think about all the other ones. And for a book, obviously, I would bring Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And I would bring the longest one, which Order I believe is Phoenix. Order of the Phoenix.
That's also my favorite. So that was going to be my choice, too.
Yeah, also my favorite.
See? Mm-hmm. Perfect. Well, I think I'll give you a teaser, too, since Selena gave you a teaser. I think that the one track for sure that I would bring would be... oh God, what is it? Don't Dream It's Over by Crowded House. I really like that song a lot, like the original version. And I always said, like, if the world is ending and like I can only pick one song on the jukebox that like the last jukebox left on Earth, it's gonna be that one.
That would be a really ironic choice.
Yeah, I know, but I need to be sent off into the abyss with like the hope that there's something on the other side. So. Don't Dream It's Over by Crowded House is my apocalypse number one, and I would take it with me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I would have It's the End of the World as we know it. It's the first one I could think of.
All right.
Okay, anyway.
Let's keep going.
Yes. Bridget at Climbing Closer says, please do a Eurovision special episode. Well, we probably won't do that because Pam didn't watch it, but it's all Pam's fault, Bridget, really. No, but I did do, as I said, a little Patreon video for that if you're a Patreon subscriber. And I hope that our mini discussion at the beginning of the episode served well.
I would love to do that 1 year, though. Like, 1 year, we're all going to have to make sure we have the day off so we can
do a live.
Yeah.
That should be a live commentary.
Oh, my God, that'd be so fun. Let's try to do it for next year. Eurovision 2018.
Yes. It would be so, you know what we should have done this year, because I swear to you, like when the butt appeared on the screen, I just turned into a little child. And I was like, it's a butt! Did you see the butt? And I think I spent the next like 20 minutes laughing at the butt. Like it was just so
it was
dumb.
Really funny. I saw that gif everywhere, and it was just so funny. Every time I saw it, I laughed. It was great.
Yeah, it was really funny. Like it doesn't take much
that and
to
the and like the dancing
humans.
Gorilla and like
yes,
so good.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Laura Morrow says, all of my shows I watched this season, minus Time After Time and Pitch, got a second season. Yay! I actually enjoyed Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 even better than the first one. I thought it was funny and heartfelt. Well, that's good. Because I think that, like, mixed ranging on so-so, which is me.
Mm-hmm. So yes, yours the so, me and
I'm,
me and
I'm the yeah, so well, I'm and the you're so. The no. So yeah. No, that's what it is. Yeah,
pretty much. Julia Lee says, ladies of hype, I need a recap of the new season of Sense8 from you people. More people should be talking about this amazing show. Oh my gosh, Sense8 is like, everyone is talking about how great it
is. I've never seen it. We're going to have...
I saw like half of an episode and I was like, okay, it's too much sex. I can't.
We're going to have to get Kyle on a show.
And, I think so.
Because he's like the Sense8
super fan. We should get Kyle to do a special. We should get him to do like a special, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll try to make that happen, Julia. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Glass says, I think everybody should watch Batman and Bill on Hulu. So, I've never heard of this show, but I'm going to have to Google it now.
Yeah. I can't do Hulu.
That's right. Here, we learned
which is also why I can't watch The Handmaid's Tale. Not even my proxies work.
Ugh. How dare they?
Yeah. I don't know. Do you want to take the email?
Sure. Since you
have the email go?
We have one email here from Ellie to wrap things up. She says, hi, Merrima, Selena, and Pam. I just wondered if you'll be watching the new Anne of Green Gables on Netflix. I loved the original series with Megan Follows and Jonathan Crombie. The story holds a lot of nostalgia for me, and I love the beautiful landscapes of Prince Edward Island. I'm cautiously optimistic of this new series and would love to hear your perspectives. Thanks for all you do on Hype and being a must-listen podcast. Best wishes, Ellie. Aww. Well, thank you, Ellie. I think this so is sweet. Called Anne with an E, right? That's the Netflix one. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm curious about it.
I'm going to watch it. Definitely going to watch it. I feel like this could be, because I remember when I was watching The Crown, I had that sense mm-hmm. of like, this is just nice, like diving into a warm bath, you know? And I feel like I don't have the same kind of nostalgic attachment to Anne of Green Gables, but I did watch the original. I don't even know if it was a show or a movie, but I remember watching it. So I would be curious how they update it. And I've heard good things. And
is this the one where like there's the boy and he calls her carrots? I've never seen Anne of Green Gables.
I think so. See, that's the thing. The problem, and I feel like we've had this conversation before, is that there are two.
Yeah, I get it mixed up with Heidi a lot, and I'm not sure why. Well, Pippi Longstocking is the other one.
Pippi is kind of by herself for me, but Heidi and Anne of Green Gables, I can never remember which is which. I think Heidi is the one where...
She's on the Alps, isn't she?
Like, yeah. She sees her grandmother burn alive or something super traumatic like that. And Anne of Green Gables is the one with the school.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. It's been a while. But if Shirley Temple was in it, chances are I watched it at some point in my life.
Yeah. But to answer your question, Ellie, yes, we will try to do that, and we will let you guys know when we've watched it. So thank you so much to everybody who sent in feedback for this episode. If you want your comments read and discussed on the show, you can do that by emailing hype@hypeable.com. You can find us on Twitter @hypeablehype. You can find us on Instagram @hypeablehype and on Tumblr, hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can leave your feedback on Hypeable, which is hypeable.com, in the podcast section under episode 146, and then we will find it for next week's show. And please also remember that if you want to, you can subscribe to us on Patreon, and depending on how much you pledge, you get different benefits, and one of those benefits will be a movie commentary that we're trying to work out when to record. Is the poll over? Has it been decided?
Yeah, officially, if you are a patron, and you can get this too when we do it for pledging at the first tier, which is $2 a month, we will be doing a DVD commentary for Mulan, the animated Disney classic from the late 90s. We're all so excited. I think everybody's really excited that Harry Potter didn't win. But I do want to mention, Selena, that I clearly our patrons love us, because the runner-up was actually One Direction's This Is Us, which I think we're going to have to do at some point anyway, because it's just so funny. But
that would have been so much fun.
But yeah,
we're
really excited to do Mulan, and we hope that you guys are excited to hear that. And we are going to figure out a time to do that before summer comes and everybody's plans get really crazy. But yeah, stay tuned for that if you're a patron, and fun stuff coming up.
Definitely. Exciting. Okay, so thank you so much for listening, everyone, and we will see you next week for episode 147. My name is Selena.
And my name is Pamela.